This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Danger! Danger!
It's not a lineup, it's not an army, it's not a stable, and it's not a family. It's an alliance of businessmen.
Take it right.
Place to Be Nation, you're listening to the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, featuring a different way to look at and debate the history of wrestling. And now, your co-host, the PTBN PWO two-man power trip, JT and Will.
The Dangerous Alliance would rather die than surrender to you.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the premiere episode of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts here tonight, good old Justin from the Place to Be Podcast, Place to Be Nation. And with me is my full-time co-host on the show that I am very excited to work with here on a regular basis. And that is good old Will from Texas.
Hey, guys.
Will, how you doing?
Justin, I'm excited to be here, and I want you to introduce our engineer here.
Right away?
Dan.
Right away. Head. Okay.
Right away, because I was so excited that we had a guy, you know, manning the board behind us, that it made me feel big league.
It is big league. And this is the biggest league show we're going to have here at Place to Be Nation. So, yes, with us is my co-producer on the Kevin Kelly Show. He helps me out there. We imported him over to this show. You've heard him on maybe some PTV and Rewinds and other podcasts as well. He writes occasionally for PlaceMination.com, and it's our friend Dan McGinn. Dan, how are you tonight?
I am doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on board for this historic show. And I might actually write two articles this month there, Justin, so go easy on me.
You know, I didn't even give you full credit for the show. So you were a producer of the Steve Corino Show during its run here, and you're also you do the board work for the History of Wrestling and Wrestling with Optimism as well. So you're a busy boy.
Yeah, if you want shows that occasionally run, I'm your guy.
Or die. Dan will be with us. He'll be running the clock for us on some of these segments that we're going to talk about in a minute. So, Will, let's just take a real quick second here. I think everyone knows who we are. I mean, you're the admin over at Pro Wrestling Only, along with Charles. You have a plethora of shows here at PlaceMination.com, as do I. I think everyone knows who we are. So why don't we talk about kind of our vision for what the show is, how it came about, and what we're looking to do in each of these episodes.
Sure. Well, here's my vision, and that is any time that you can start thinking outside of the box in wrestling history and get other people to talk about the topics that we're going to bring up, JR, I think that's a plus. Anytime you can go back and revisit history and learn from it and debate it, I think that's a magnificent thing.
Agreed. So I was looking, to do something with you because you kind of piqued my interest back with WrestleMania season. I had just, my son had just been born like the week, you know, a couple weeks before Mania, and you were churning out these podcasts. And I was so angry that I didn't have the time to jump on one of them because the concepts all sounded so cool. And I made it a goal to myself that once I had some free time, I was going to reach out to you about maybe doing a one-off show similar to what you did there. And over the course of like a week, that spun out of control into a full-time show, and then we spent a couple hours on the phone one night, and it grew from this one idea into this like wild batch of ideas that we're going to utilize throughout the history of the show's run that we're going to have here. And it just really mushroomed, and I think we have a really cool concept. So what we're going to do is each episode, and these will be regular, each episode we're going to have three, we're going to call them falls, right? So each fall is going to have a stipulation or a challenge behind it. We have a whole bunch of different exercises listed out, all different topics within those exercises. We're going to do three of those per episode. They're going to be timed. We have a half hour. And if you know Will and I, we like to talk, so this is going to be even more of a challenge for us. We're going to have a half hour to debate these different topics, to take on these challenges, to defeat the our opponents, which is a challenge in these falls. And Dan will be keeping us honest with the clock. He'll be popping in on a regular basis to give us a time update so our listeners know where we're at, so we know where we're at. and we have to wrap at the gun. So that's it. Once the bell rings, we have to be done. We can't spill over. No overtime. No extra time. We're done at the bell, regardless of where we are. So even if that means we got to pick it up in the next episode or something like that, if we're not done, we'll do that. But we're going to be on a strict time limit on these segments. The final segment of the show will be a 15-minute mailbag. We already have a ton of questions from ProWrestlingOnly.com message board, from our Facebook live chats page, from all our great fans at PTBN and PWO that are out there right now. Gave us a ton of questions, so we'll answer a few of those, as many as 15 minutes permit. So that is pretty much the story there, Will. Anything you want to add before we get started?
No, man, I'm ready to do this. I want to jump right into the first topic.
All right, Dan, why don't you tell us what the stipulation is for fall number one?
If I could turn back time, if I could find.
Gentlemen, your first challenge is what if? What if Vince McMahon allows Randy Savage to work a full-time schedule in 93 and 94 and he stays with the WWF?
Oof. All right, that's a good one, Dan. Good way to start off here. So, Will, this game really is, we're just going to have some fun rebooking. So Macho Man stays active, doesn't leave, stays with the company. We have 30 minutes to do our best. We'll work together on this one, I think, and we'll try and lay out our best plan starting, I'd say, like, what, maybe spring of 93 is when he started to taper off. So why don't we pick up there? And, Dan, why don't you go ahead and start the clock? We officially have 30 minutes, Will, to get this done. Do you want to take the first stab at where you see him going? Let's pick it up right after Rumble 93. I think that's when he started to really taper off, when he started announcing on Raw.
Okay, well, now we have to look at this two ways, Justin. Okay, we can't just look at it from the WWF perspective, because Randy Savage not going to WCW also affects the way WCW is going to be booked.
Right. Yep.
So we're going to have to look at it from both perspectives. And I want to just make sure that we don't just kind of give WCW the shaft that, you know, not signing Randy Savage is kind of a big deal in WCW. It affects a lot of major storylines, maybe affects the way we perceive some future superstars that Savage feuded with. And so I want to keep that in mind too.
So why don't we set a goal to spend the first half of this talking about his WWF run, and then this back end saying what would have been different in WCW.
Sure. Okay. And so, like, he's an announcer in 93, right?
Yeah, so he competes at Royal Rumble 93. He's one of the last two. And then he's in the booth at Mania, King of the Ring, special guest host at SummerSlam. And then he gets a little active again in the fall when Crush turns on him. He's at Survivor Series, and then that. And then he's active till about Mania 10, and then after that, he's really doesn't do much outside of a match here or there.
Yeah, and then he had the match with Crush at the 10th WrestleMania.
Yep.
Okay, and so what are we going to do? Are we going to book him in a different feud in 93? We're going to keep him out of the announce booth.
Yeah, let's keep him out of the announce booth. I want to keep him active coming out of the Rumble 93. And we can keep the Crush thing intact if we want. But
I don't want to.
I don't want to.
You know what? Because to me, Randy Macho Man Savage is a legend. You know, he should never be put on the back burner. He shouldn't be in the mid card. For me, he should be right at the top. So for me, I think our challenge is, how do we integrate Randy Savage into the Yokozuna, Lex Luger, Bret Hart thing that's going on at top? And even the Hulk Hogan, right? Hulk Hogan has not left yet in 93, right? Doesn't he leave after King of the Ring 93?
Right, but he had left. He came back in February. He's at Mania. Okay. Then he doesn't wrestle at all. Then he loses King of the Ring and he's gone.
Right. So I'm thinking that if Hulk Hogan's leaving, right, and him and Randy Savage, I wonder if they were on good terms or not. I'm not really a big backstage kind of guy. So
they,
I don't know if him and Savage were on speaking terms.
Well, there's that rumor going around. There's the rumor that Savage punched him that gave Hogan the black eye at WrestleMania 9. I don't know if that's ever been corroborated or if it's true or not.
I don't really get into that kind of thing. But I'm thinking if they're on good terms and Hogan's leaving, well, we already know he's not going to do the favors for Bret Hart, mm-hmm. right? Because of his attitude and the perception that Bret Hart's too small of a wrestler. So instead of having Hogan lose to a cameraman and Yokozuna at King of the Ring, I say you build up your loser leave town or loser must retire match with Hogan and Savage.
Now you keep it in both face?
Well, I mean, sure. Let the crowd cheer who they want.
Okay.
You know, I don't mind. You know, I mean, because to me, I mean, if you even if you look at like Hogan versus Warrior, they kept both of them face.
Right.
And if we're treating Savage like a legend,
yeah.
And we're treating Hogan like a legend and giving him this way out of the company, I don't have any problem with that. What would you do the same, or do you have a different path you want to go to with Savage?
So I want to back up.
I'm setting him up with Hogan. I'm having Savage knock Hogan out. That way he's kind of like the top dog legend to start feuding with your Lugers, your Yokozunas, and your Bret Harts.
Okay, so I'm backing up a bit to the Rumble, and I'm having Savage win the Rumble. And I'm having Yokozuna pick up an undercard win at the Rumble to stay strong. I'm having Savage lose a really hard-fought main event to Bret at WrestleMania. So we don't do any of the Hogan world title stuff or any Yoko stuff. So Bret picks up like a 20-minute passing the torch in a way, but we're keeping Savage around. So, you know, it's like Hogan Warrior at six in many ways. You know, maybe a step down. But, you know, Hogan was staying around, but it was still a torch passing. It's more of like, okay, Bret, you're on our level now. You just beat Macho Man in the main event at WrestleMania. And don't forget, he had just won the world title the year before, WrestleMania 8. So it's a big deal to beat Macho Man in a world title match at WrestleMania. So Bret Hart would then go on and lose to Yokozuna at King of the Ring. And then you could proceed from there if you want with Yoko's title, right? And I'm down with your idea. I'll go with your Savage Hogan idea at King of the Ring. You could also, if Hogan doesn't want to go out with a loss to Savage for whatever reason, you could even do a tag. You could do the Money Inc. Mega Mania, or instead of doing Hogan and Beefcake, you could do Hogan and Savage Mega Powers versus Money Inc. And that's it's Hogan's farewell match, and him and Savage win and celebrate one last time, and Hogan leaves. So you could even do that too if he refuses to lay down.
Okay, and I agree with all of that. You know, the main thing is we have to get Hogan out of the way, right?
Okay, so he's gone.
Because Hogan's gone, and then so after King of the Ring, what are you doing for SummerSlam? What's going to be your main event for SummerSlam?
All right, so we got, to me, Yokozuna's your champion. So you could still do him, I mean, well, I don't know, do you want to give Savage another world title match here? I guess maybe you argue that he won. Oh, what about this? What if Mr. Perfect wins King of the Ring and Savage challenges him? Maybe they play up, you know, Savage is formerly Macho King, they were former partners of Survivor Series, and they kind of get a little testy. Because you could even have Savage in King of the Ring if you don't want to do the Hogan thing. And maybe Perfect beats him in the second round, and they have a big rematch at SummerSlam. You could do something along those lines.
Okay, well, you could. But if you're going to have Perfect win King of the Ring, you know, the big thing about the King of the Ring was it really set up that Jerry Lawler feud.
Right.
You know, this is where Jerry Lawler comes out and breaks the scepter.
I like where you're
maybe headed, yeah. So I'm thinking, now, people who don't know, Randy Savage came from the Memphis territory to WWF. You know, and some of our listeners might not know that. They might be, you know, in their own wheelhouse, and that's fine, but I'm just letting people know that in the 80s, he went from Memphis to WWF.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having Savage and Lawler hook up. I'm having Lawler come out. You know, Savage can win that King of the Ring.
Mm-hmm. I like that better than the Hogan
instead
stuff.
Of Perfect. Then you pick up that Lawler-Savage feud from a decade before. Now, some people might look at this and say, well, look, you're not elevating the new guys that need to be elevated, right? Because let's be honest, Lawler is past his prime, but he could still wrestle. And Savage is, you know, he's the elder statesman. He's the elder legend, right? So you're not really focusing on that younger generation of Yoko and Bret. So
you could do this. And I argue that Savage maybe isn't the legend. Maybe because we're keeping him around. We're keeping him strong. We don't want to even position him as an old legend. He's just a star.
Okay. I guess that's the hard part about this challenge, right? Is that in my mind, Savage is always a legend.
But he's just not presented as an aging. Lawler wasn't even presented that way by the WWF. He was just like an active competitor.
True. That is absolutely true, and you're keeping me honest here too, because I was venturing down that path.
But no, I like that feud. So what if we do this though? What if we go back to King of the Ring again, and we have Bret Hart retain there over narcissist Lex Luger, right? So he doesn't change. He gives Luger his first defeat. Then we go to SummerSlam where Yoko beats Bret there. And then we do Savage Lawler. And the reason I take Yoko out of the King of the Ring title match is he retires Hogan still. It's just a non-title match. So Yoko's picking up momentum, gets a win at the Rumble, gets a big win at Mania, maybe ends Tatanka's undefeated streak at Mania. Then he takes out Hogan at King of the Ring. And now he's really built up for Bret at SummerSlam, and he beats Bret for the title.
And let me ask you this. Are we taking out the Lex Express?
The Lex Express is derailed on I-95 somewhere. So he's
okay. So what are we doing with Lex Luger? Because he was, moving through 94, my man Lex is, he's pretty important to this equation.
Well, so he's still, in my world, he's still heel at King of the Ring. He's the narcissist, loses the world title match to Bret, challenges him, because that was a feud in the spring anyway. And now we can still turn him at some point in here. Maybe after SummerSlam, he turns to try and take out Yoko. So maybe we still do Lex Express, but instead of building to SummerSlam, maybe it's building to Survivor Series, and we have a Luger-Yoko title match or top Survivor Series.
Okay. So I just wanted to get this set up, because really, after 94, I think, if you look at where the WWF was positioned, it really was in the doldrums, right? And so we're trying to make Savage make it more exciting,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, keep some of the things we enjoyed.
Like 20 minutes remaining, guys. 20 minutes.
Oh no. We haven't even touched WCW yet. All right. So
we're not even out of 93.
I know. So, okay. So let's not really dig deep into Survivor Series.
Yeah, let's kind of. He's in some match against Lawler, we'll say.
Sure. Him and Lawler are still having their feud.
Yeah.
And then we can even say that, at the Rumble, they have like a pre-Rumble match. One of the matches.
Blow-off at the Rumble. We're done with them now.
Yeah, we're still doing the Bret Owen breakup feud, right? Yep. Because people love that feud. Okay, even though it didn't do box office, but that's okay because we're going to have Savage here to produce box office.
So there's one match I want to do, but I'm afraid to change what happened at WrestleMania 10.
What's that?
An elevation match for Shawn Michaels on a big stage with Randy Savage.
We can't take away the ladder match later.
Okay.
Because Shawn Michaels isn't at that level yet. You know what I mean? He doesn't even win his first title till 96.
Right.
And we really don't even have to change that right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, this guy is a prima donna. There's a reason, they had the ladder match. Him and Ramon can still have the ladder match at 10.
We'll leave that alone.
Yeah.
We
can leave Bret Owen alone and still have Bret win the title, except... maybe have Yoko and Savage wrestle in a prelim versus.
So then you're having Savage
Yoko
and Bret.
Rex.
So you're having Savage and Bret co-win the Rumble.
Or, if we have to, or the Savage doesn't have to be the main event of Mania. I think he should be. Would you rather see Savage Bret or the match we got with Bret and Yoko?
Well, so here's the idea I like. I like Bret loses to Owen still. So Savage and Bret win the Rumble in place of Luger. So Luger to me is still the narcissist. Maybe he hasn't turned yet. And you have Savage and Bret co-win the Rumble. Bret loses to Owen. Savage beats Yoko in the undercard and then gets the win over Bret to close out Mania 10. So it's a hard... It sets up a storyline where Bret is even more... damaged by the loss to Owen because he was overconfident going in. He gets dinged up in the match with Owen, and then Savage gets his revenge from the year before. So now you set up a rubber match on the line too, where Bret and Savage
and Bret's 1-1. Not getting his big Mania win, right? But really, Mania 10, the victory was kind of a "we're sorry, what happened at WrestleMania 9."
Right. In our world, he wins at 9, so we're good.
Right. So there's no need to apologize to the guy. I love it. See, this is logical booking. You're using Savage because Savage proved, man, he could still go for several more years. So
then
94, we're still having Owen and Bret battle through.
Yep.
Who's Savage's main? Is it going to be like Bret mixed in there? Or are we going to do Savage goes off on a completely different path.
Yeah, I think he goes on a different path for now, and then Brett gets back in the mix later. So we need to do the rubber match.
Because Ramon is still at intercontinental level. Yeah. So are we going to elevate him yet, or are we going to keep him and Sean at that intercontinental level?
Yeah, I think Ramon stays at the IC level till SummerSlam when he... I think him and Diesel still do their thing. I think Diesel beats him on TV, and they have their IC feud. Sean takes his little break. What if we run Savage Narcissist Luger at King of the Ring?
Okay, I can see it. I don't know aesthetically if that's great, but it, you know, if we're still keeping Luger strong as a main eventer, I have no problem with that. And is Perfect, what's going on with Perfect at this time?
Perfect is gone. He left at the end of 93, came back briefly as the ref at 10, and then left.
Okay.
So he's not even around here.
Okay. And so 94, we're kind of in this Holden pattern of just kind of Luger, Brett, Owen, Savage at the top. Maybe throw in Lawler every once in a while. You know,
and you can have some great TV matches, right? So you start having Savage like do the Brett on Raw. So maybe he fights 1-2-3 Kid. Maybe he fights Bam Bam Bigelow. You know, a bunch of guys.
Marty Jannetty, Doink. Yep. Yeah.
IRS. Whoever. You know, like just random guys that he picks up good hard-fought wins over on TV, storming into SummerSlam. So now you're doing Brett Owen and their blow-off in the cage. You still do that. Do you do Savage Undertaker or something along those lines instead of doing the fake Taker?
You absolutely do Savage Undertaker over Undertaker fake Taker.
Okay, so let's do that.
15 minutes remain, guys. 15 minutes.
Oof.
All right. No, we got this. We got this. Okay, you do Savage and Undertaker. You build up something for them.
Yep.
Because you want, you know what? If I'm Vince McMahon, I'm thinking, okay, I'm tired of Undertaker fighting these stiffs. We know Undertaker eventually becomes a good, solid worker, right? A good, solid wrestler who has, like, exciting matches. You know, let's kickstart that. You know, instead of waiting for Foley to get signed in 2 years, let's kickstart Undertaker having good matches now. Let's start positioning him with the work rate guys. Let's start positioning Taker with the Bretts, with the Shawns, with the Savages. Right now. So I like that for 94. Okay, so I'm having Savage feud with Taker, kind of get him into that go style, that exciting style that the lighter guys are using. You
Savage
know,
wins?
He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to.
I have an idea. So
okay, but hold on. Yep. And remember when we were talking about TV matches, you also have 1-2-3 Kid there, lighten it up, man. You can have Savage 1-2-3 Kid in a couple of really excellent, hot TV matches. But continue with the Taker idea.
No, so I'm past Taker. So Savage wins that match, and now he's really red hot, right? So he's won the world title. He knocked off Luger at King of the Ring, knocked off Taker at SummerSlam, fights off Mr. Bob Backlund at Survivor Series, survives that match, and then here we head into 95. He re-signs because obviously he's world champion. Now, my question to you is, A, do you still have Diesel get up to that level, or do you keep him down a bit? B,
well, I was going to say, my name's Mr. McMahon. Diesel's going to become champion.
Okay.
I think we have to find creative ways to make that happen, but not make him the worst drawing champion of all time.
Okay, so how about
That's
we do?
Hard part.
How about we use Savage? We use Brett to transition. So Brett and Savage have their big blow off at the Rumble, and Brett gets the win because I think we have to have Brett get the rubber match win, and then Diesel beats Brett at WrestleMania, and that's where we do our Macho Man Shawn Michaels kind of match to get Shawn ready for his big run in 95.
Okay, I'm okay with that. And then so during this time, I'm guessing that Brett is not bitter. And him and Shawn Michaels aren't going to really cross paths the way that they ended up doing?
Well, it depends how we want to head into 96. So if Brett loses to Diesel, Diesel has his run in 95. Savage goes. Shawn goes over Savage at WrestleMania 11. Shawn still turns face. And then, you know, depends what you want to do from Savage from there. You could do the often rumored, you know, Razor Ramon heel turn if you want to do a feud with Savage and Ramon.
Okay.
You can have some Savage Jarrett matches if you want to do an IC title match.
Let me ask you this. Yep. We don't want to put Savage at the IC title level.
Okay. Not even for a little dip down while he's
not even. No. Like Hogan would never. Because you got to remember, man, we got rid of Hogan, right?
Yep.
So we don't want to ever lower him to that level again. You know what I mean? Hogan would never be IC title.
Gotcha.
Neither would Savage.
Okay, but you're you were okay with him putting over Shawn at Mania?
I have no problem with him putting Shawn over at Mania for the title.
Okay, so then maybe we give him a break in the summer because he's been going hard now. He's a little bit older. So maybe he leaves. Maybe the night after WrestleMania, Sid, turns on Shawn and maybe he lays out Savage as part of his little run up and he still has his match with Diesel. So let's put Savage on the shelf till like SummerSlam or so, or to the fall.
Okay.
So he takes a little break.
Okay.
Recharges the batteries.
Okay. I don't even have a problem with that. I don't even care if it's Sid or anybody else that puts
someone,
it doesn't matter.
Someone
doesn't
hurts
matter.
Him and he's out.
Right. And then when did we bring him back?
Well, depends. See, I think we have to decide who hurts him because I think that maybe Razor turns. How about that? Razor turns on him, beats him up, puts him out, and then we build to a SummerSlam comeback for Savage where he goes over Ramon, heel Ramon.
It's SummerSlam 95.
SummerSlam 95.
Okay. So then, I can see that. I have no problem with that. So you're then doing that. And then are we keeping Diesel on his same trajectory? Because when does he finally lose the belt? Was it Survivor Series 95?
Yes, but also we gave him the title much later. So originally he won right after Survivor Series 94. We didn't give him until Mania. So he's a little bit behind where he was. But yeah, we can have him drop it back.
But remember, his contract is coming up. Him and Ramon are gone. They're going to the NWO.
Right.
We're going to have to account for that. And then we have all these new guys coming in.
10 minutes, guys. 10 minutes.
We have this guy named Goldust coming in. We have this guy named Steve Austin coming in.
Yep.
We got this guy Flex Cavana training down in Memphis in about a year. So
T.O. Hopper is on the premises.
My man T.O. Hopper, a dirty white boy, was an amazing wrestler.
Hey, we can do a fantasy rulebook of him if they brought him in like that instead of T.O. Hopper.
I love it. So anyway, I can't believe we only have 10 minutes left and we haven't touched WCW yet. Oh, my God. All right. So, I'm there. Let's move to Mania. What's Savage doing in WrestleMania 1996?
Right, so my thought is Brett wins the title from Diesel at some point, either SummerSlam or Survivor Series. I think Shawn still goes over Brett at WrestleMania 12 to win the
title. But do we want to do the Iron Man?
No. Shawn just goes over Brett. Maybe if you want to do like a 2 out of 3 or something, you can, but I'm not doing the Iron Man.
Okay. Okay, so we're not going 1 hour and 10 minutes. Okay,
no.
I'm okay with that.
So we need a big...
So then who are we having Savage feud with?
Savage does... Maybe he does the Diesel feud, and maybe Undertaker gets swapped to Ramon, and then runs Ramon out of town, and maybe Savage beats Diesel.
Okay, or, if Ramon's the one who hurt him, then they have their big, big blow-off at Mania, right? Doesn't
Instead
matter.
Of SummerSlam? Because I was thinking SummerSlam. So maybe you do this. Maybe you start working a tag, right? So maybe it turns out... So Ramon turns, puts out Savage. Savage comes back, beats him at SummerSlam. Then Diesel turns after SummerSlam and joins up with Ramon. And they start going on this run of terror throughout the fall. And then you have Savage and Taker have to team up. So maybe at the Rumble 96, you do a tag match, Razor and Diesel versus Savage and Taker. And then maybe
Savage and Brett, somebody, right, is going to have to take him out. Some team is going to take him out.
And then maybe
you
split them off at Mania and you do... like I said, Savage, Diesel, Taker, Ramon, mix it up a bit. Another guy in the mix now is Vader, so we could do a Savage Vader match at some point here.
Oh, man, that would be painful because I love Savage so much, man, and Vader is just going to murder him.
Well, we have to. So maybe Vader, Vader puts the beating on him to set him up as the title contender. And this is where you hit the territory, like you said. You can have an in your house match with Goldust. Maybe you have an in your house match with Savage. So let's go month by month and just ask long term. So let's assume Savage goes hard into early 98. Let's say he finishes around when Shawn does, because that's really when he started to break down in WCW. So what do you do with him during 97? 97 is all the Hart family stuff, Brett and Austin, Shawn starting DX. Like, where do you see him fitting in with all that?
I would say maybe if we're going to end Savage in 98, you still have Austin go over HBK at Mania, and then you build up to that Austin-Savage blow-off where Austin retires Savage. So now Austin not only – who is your superstar – has not only beaten HBK, put him into the retirement house. You have now also forced Savage into retirement. Austin put Savage in retirement. He can have his heel turn, you know, where, you know, now the fans don't appreciate him. You know, he bled for this company. You know, he sacrificed for the company. And now they're cheering this guy who likes to swear and drink beer in the ring, and that he's, you know, he becomes bitter, you know, the way Brett became bitter. And then Austin.
Right, so that's my question. So you turn him, you turn Savage heel maybe in 97 sometime.
Well, you know, you almost do what you did with the Warrior Loser Leaves Town.
Right.
Which is you build him up as a heel, and to get that eventually by the end, you get that sympathetic babyface send off.
So where are you doing it? Because we can't do it in Mania, and you don't want to touch Highway to Hell at SummerSlam.
Oh, I actually, if Savage is super huge, I mean, the Highway to Hell match wasn't that great.
I know,
but
that
I understand
so
people. I know people have some, but you can't go too far after that because there's a guy named The Rock coming up in '99 who's going to explode. So,
well, do you have Savage lose? So maybe the Austin match isn't a retirement match, right? So maybe Savage turns heel, gets bitter, gets angry. Austin beats him at like No Way Out heading into Mania. Then Savage gets one last match as a face. Maybe someone, you know, embarrasses him the next night on Raw after No Way Out. Oh God, you know, you're on the way down. Just retire already. I got one more.
Well, maybe a Triple H or the Rock.
Right. You know, Savage Rock would be great. Rock puts him over in Savage's last match.
Yeah, I wouldn't even have a problem with that. But you know, either way, like I think 98's kind of his last hurrah. But let's jump over to the other side.
Okay. Five minutes.
For 5 minutes, we're going to talk WCW. What does WCW lose?
All right. So
Hogan comes over. You know, JR, you, me, Scott, my buddy Charles. We reviewed every 1994 WCW pay per view.
Sure did.
WCW was hot. The product was aesthetically pleasing. Super matches up and down the card from the beginning to the end, right? Yep. Throughout the whole year, Hogan shows up, dominates Flair, then he goes on to dominate Vader. He fights off all the old has-beens from a past era and the horrible Dungeon of Doom angle. Savage comes in, helps Hogan fight off the Dungeon of Doom. So now we don't even have Savage helping Hogan fight off the Dungeon of Doom, right?
And we also lose the Savage-Flair feud of 95
yes,
with Angelo Poffo.
That went into 96, absolutely. Yep. And that, if you recall, because Hogan wasn't really doing the house show circuit, that Savage-Flair feud actually helped the WCW house show.
Right, so there were two feuds. They had the one in 95, that was with Angelo, where they beat, you know, Flair and Arn or whoever beat him up, and then Savage fought him two months in a row, the Bash and then Bash at the Beach in the Lumberjack match. And then 96, they reignite it with Elizabeth, where she turns and she starts spending all of Savage's money, you know, Flair spending all his money. That's the feud that got the house shows up.
That's right. So we lose that, right?
And we lose Savage as a main guy for WCW when Hogan turns.
We lose Savage as the possible guy who's going to turn for the NWO. So that intrigue is out. Right,
but that could be filled by a number of guys.
Sure. I mean, but I'm not saying that isn't. But still, right. Savage is a pretty important guy in the company at the time.
Three minute warning.
Oh no! Then in '97, we're gonna lose that DDP feud, man.
We're gonna,
one of the things that people credit for giving DDP credibility as a main eventer was that Savage feud. So that's out the window. And Savage is never a part of the NWO, so and to be fair, some of that got convoluted and they never really capitalized on that like they should. But he doesn't build DDP up.
I think we lose two main things that would hurt, and that is the Flair feud with the money in '96, which was excellent. And then the DDP series.
'97.
To me, those are the two, and hot. Older Elizabeth, hot MILF Elizabeth, we lose.
Right. Well, maybe she's still, maybe she comes in and she has like a mud bath matches with Sable or something.
Well, you could have Pillman is banging her, right? You could have done a Savage Pillman match in '97.
So he's escorted down to the ring by Goldust old lady and Elizabeth,
yeah.
You know?
That's it, yeah. Both of them. So he does the Flair thing, and then him, you know, him and Savage in 97 or, you know, whatever, early 97 before he dies would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, man, one of these days we'll have to do a what if on Pillman's ankle, you know, because I don't want to talk about his death so much as I want to talk about his ankle, you know, and how that really changed what could have happened. But yeah, WCW though, right? Definitely hurt by the loss of Savage.
Yeah, definitely. And WWF helped so much. And here's a novelty match you could throw out too. When they do the ECW invasion on Raw, you run Savage RVD on one of those matches on Raw. I mean, there's so many random one-off Raw
Savage
matches.
Steamer. Oh yeah, or Savage Funk helps ECW against Lawler.
Right.
One more minute.
You could do Savage Terry Funk.
Oh, Savage Terry Funk, man.
We didn't even talk about Savage Mankind or, you know, whatever. I mean, these are all matches we didn't get into that could have happened on either in your house shows or Raws or whatever, you know, wherever else.
Yeah, that would have been amazing. I mean, and we always looked at WCW as the work rate company and, you know, bringing in the luchadors and then those guys, it really was. But Savage staying in the WWF as a regular performer really ups the quality of those shows.
And there's more. Well, WCW didn't need him from a work. I mean, they need him from a name perspective, but not from a work rate perspective, like you said. I feel like he fit really well with a lot of the guys at WWF, maybe more, just in a different way. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no,
I think matches with Austin, and I think he did fight him in WCW, but a real match, you know, with Vader, with which I guess he had
right.
too. But I feel like, you know, Mankind.
But those
guys,
matches yeah. weren't the same. Those were under Hogan rules.
Yeah.
Not
time
under.
Is up.
Whoa! Damn it.
Man.
Right. Could have went all night on that one. But that's the constraints we put in place, and that is the great part of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. We're always going to leave you wanting just a little bit more. And like I said, maybe someday we revisit something either directly or tangentially related to this. So why don't we take a break, guys? We'll come back, and we'll have fall number two upon us.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, The Place to Be Podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past through Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net. All right, we're back from break here. Hope you're enjoying the inaugural edition of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. It's myself, JR, here with Will and Dan McGinn running the board behind the booth for us. And Dan, we want to bring you right back in here to let us know what our second fall is. What is the stipulation for us here?
Try to be best, 'cause you're only a man.
Boys, our second fall is called Dangerous Five, and we're looking for your favorite North American wrestlers.
All right, well, so in this exercise here, we're each going to give lists of five. We'll go back and forth. We'll alternate. And we're, like Dan said, we're going to give our top five all-time favorite North American wrestlers. And now this isn't best. This isn't who we think are the greatest, the best workers, or the best draw. This is literally just the favorites. Who are you throwing in your DVDs, your tapes, your betas of if you're watching some wrestling and you can only pick matches of five guys? We'll say that. So, Dan, you can go ahead and start the clock. And as I told you in the break, Will, I cheated a bit. I got six, so I'm going to do an honorable mention. So why don't we each do an honorable mention? I'll start things off, and then we'll rotate back and forth. How about that?
Sounds fair.
All right. In my number six slot is Brian Pillman. Always a huge Pillman fan. I loved him as Flying Brian. But when I really got into him was the Hollywood Blondes run. That's really when I started to embrace both WCW and WWF. So to give a really brief background, I grew up as a big-time WWF fan. Started watching in 1990. That was my home promotion. Became kind of cognizant of WCW in 92. And then by 93, I was watching everything regularly. But I always still favored WWF at the time. So, but Brian Pillman immediately hooked me in the Flying Brian character. Loved the Hollywood Blondes. Loved his 95 kind of asshole-ish turn that I've kind of been reliving now. He has the awesome match with Johnny B. Badd at a Fall Brawl. They go a half hour. Of course, then he turns, goes with the Horseman, and then the Loose Cannon, ECW, and then, of course, we all know his WWF run. Just a guy I really just connected to. He really just hooked me in, whether it was through his in-ring work and then eventually with his character. A guy that I was heartbroken when he rebusted his ankle and had to leave in late 96. And then when he came back in 97, instantly again, I gravitated to him as one of my favorite performers. And when they announced he passed away of bad blood, I was torn up. I was so heartbroken to have lost him because just the potential in that era. If there was ever an era made for a guy, like the Attitude Era and Brian Pillman was such a fit. And it's just awful that we didn't get to see him at least a little bit more into 98.
Yeah, I like the idea of Brian Pillman. I'm going to give an honorable mention to a Memphis guy, and that's Dutch Mantel.
Mm-hmm.
Most people know Dutch Mantel today as Zeb Coulter.
Yep.
Okay, the Cesaro and Jack Swagger's manager, and before that he was a Zebekiah, the blue twins.
Yeah,
he was
the Blue
there,
Brothers, managed. And then Bradshaw. He managed Bradshaw.
That's right. And so I know a lot of people don't know of Dutch Mantel, the wrestler. My first exposure to Dutch Mantel was as one part of the Kansas Jayhawks with Bobby Jaggers back in 1986 on NWA TV. Wasn't really enamored with him back then as a kid. But as I started gathering more Memphis footage, had classic feuds with Jerry Lawler, obviously, had a classic feud where Buddy Landell and Bill Dundee turned on Dutch, and he had to call Jerry Lawler to help him put down the Bill and Buddy experiment. And so I always have a special soft place in my heart for hairy wrestlers and guys with hair on their back. Now George's Animal Steel is not one of my picks here, but you know, that guy never shaved his back up until, and then he was in a fabulous color commentator in Smoky Mountain Wrestling. So props to Dutch Mantel as my honorable mention.
So a lot of our listeners may not be too familiar with his work. What is the, I mean, you mentioned a couple angles there. If there's like a Dutch match that we have to all see to really understand him, do you have just like one personal favorite? Just great match?
Absolutely. 1982 versus Jerry Lawler in a barbed wire match where the ropes are wrapped in barbed wire. But that is part of a series of matches where they did the barbed wire. They did a brawl around the arena. They did a regular match, and they did a TV match, a Loser Leaves Town match. So it's part of a bigger series. It's one of the feuds of 1982.
Right, but we may have to have a fall here on a future episode. The Will Educates JR challenge, and I'll watch him. We'll talk about it. So that might be a good one.
Hey, JR, that's what's great about doing this podcast is that you and I come from different angles. I always love to hear, even if I disagree with what you say. And I don't disagree with anything you said about Brian Pillman. Even if I disagree with you, I always love to hear other people's inputs and to see where they're coming from. I think it's fascinating. So let's continue, man. Let's not run out of time for the number ones. Who do you got at number five?
Okay, number five, and like you said, I'm definitely coming from a different position. So I can tell you right now, all mine are mainly Dirty F guys. I mean, they're sprinkled in elsewhere, but mainly Dirty F guys. Number five, I'm putting in Steve Austin at number five, a guy I was a big fan of, again, with the Hollywood Blondes. Tapered off a bit, but then I was super excited when he came to Dirty F, and then obviously you know where he went from there. The Stone Cold character, so iconic, so many great matches and moments. The only reason he's so low is he really lost me in the end of 2000 when he came back from the injury, and then again in early 02 when he started to get that kind of paranoid run, and he had that bad match or a couple of bad matches with Jericho, and then everything that happened. I'm not going to get into his off the court issues, but that really soured me for a while on him, and it took me a bit to get back into him. So he doesn't get much higher than number five, but I always loved him enough during his big run. He was such a favorite of mine, and as a Dodia fan and apologist at the time, what he did to save the company was always, meant a lot to me, because I was always rooting for them versus WCW at that time period. So it was like, oh, this is our guy now. He's our leader. So to me, that was always such a big part of who he was.
Okay. Well, my number five ties in with your number five, because your number five, Steve Austin, put my number five out of business, Ricky Steamboat.
Nice.
And Ricky Steamboat. Now, JR, I'm an old man. I'm in my 40s. Well, okay, I'm 40. All right, so, I've been around. I've been watching wrestling on and off since 1980, okay? Ricky Steamboat was my idol as a kid, and I vaguely remember him when he was doing the territories. I remember my sisters talking about how wonderful he looked, more than I actually remember seeing him wrestle, okay?
He did look wonderful. I'll give him that.
But once he came in, that karate gi in WWF, and he was like this karate warrior, I was sold. Man, you got to remember, this is the era of the Karate Kid, mm-hmm. and every kid doing karate chops and crane kicks on the schoolyard, And Ricky Steamboat comes in as like the WWF's version of the Karate Kid. And then it turns out he's a magnificent wrestler. On top of things, with a legendary feud with Savage, comes in, wins the world title, has the legendary series with Flair, becomes a great tag team guy, early 90s WCW, and then had a great series of matches with Austin. So Ricky Steamboat always had a special place in my heart as one of my favorite guys.
Yep. And then his comeback in 09 was fantastic, too, with the match with Jericho and everything. I was there for that Backlash 09.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
In Providence, so that was a ton of fun. And just seeing him get that moment again, the guy that was always the guy that, he was always the example of someone who left, walked away, and never came back, and then there he was, So it was really cool to see him get that kind of reintroduction to some newer fans.
It was just cool to prove that he could still go.
Oh, yeah, at a high level. I mean, that match with Jericho is legit. That's not even a match where you say, well, for an old man, it's good. No, it's really good. just for what it is.
Who do you have number four, bud?
All right. I have Bret the Hitman Hart, a guy I watched develop from tag wrestler to Intercontinental to world champion. And I have two runs of his that really cement him here. One is his run in 94, which is a time period where I was a super into WWF, getting out of eighth grade, heading into high school that whole summer. Was just all wrestling, and that was the summer of Bret. I was at the Rumble in 94, where we, cheered him over Luger, and then just watching him beat, lose to Owen, beat Yoko, and then have that run throughout 94 with all those good TV matches, the great match with the Kid that we referenced earlier. That run, I just love that run. And then again, in 97, the Hart Foundation stuff. Just really one of the best, just storytelling wrestlers that the WWF had. Even rewatching, Scott and I have been redoing our Vintage Vault Refresh series. We're into 94 now. And just watching his matches again, just a guy that's always out there telling a story, always working some kind of angle throughout his match, whether it's selling the knee or the fingers or the hand. His matches at King of the Ring 93 are still a joy to watch, where he fights Ramon, Mr. Perfect, and Bigelow and over almost 50 minutes of action across the three matches, and they're all fantastic. Just a real, you know, obviously a very high volume of great matches. And when you mix in his character stuff from 97, to me, that just puts him over the top. You know, him and Austin are very close in my eyes, but, you know, to me, Brett had the longer career that I was a bigger fan of.
Okay. My next guy, another old school guy, and just a little background for people who don't know who I am. I have worked on certain projects over at different message boards where I put together what we call the 80s project over at the Death Valley Driver video review message
20
board.
Minutes remaining, guys. 20 minutes.
And my job was to accumulate 1980s footage that we could use so we could rank matches throughout the 80s.
Yep.
And one of the territories that we discovered footage from was the Portland territory, the old Don Owens territory.
Yes.
Okay. This is where Roddy Piper cut his teeth, Billy Jack Haynes, the Sheep Herders.
And we should
Adrian
give a quick
Adonis.
We'll give a quick plug in here. Titans of Wrestling at Placement Nation did an episode on Portland in the 80s.
So nice. Yeah. So, and the only reason I'm bringing this up is I want people to know that Portland was an important territory. You know, with people that they would be very familiar with. Now, one of the guys from Portland that I hated as a child because I saw him in a tag team with Doug Summers in the AWA against the Midnight Rockers, Michaels and Jannetty, was Buddy Rose.
I thought you were going to go for Billy Jack Haynes.
No way. Billy Jack is horrible. Buddy Rose was this fat, slimy, out of shape, arrogant jerk. I mean, you know, I'm trying not to use profanity here. Shocker of all shockers.
Right. Oh, we'll explain that after this game, by the way. We have a rule on this show. We'll get into that after this game.
But this guy took playing the heel to another level. And I guess the reason it was so easy for Buddy is because he was a heel in real life. I guess the guy was really a scumbag in real life, too. But I could not stand him as a kid. When I was a kid in the era of the Road Warriors and Sting and the Kerry Von Erichs, this guy did not look like he could lace their boots. And it turns out he was a better wrestler than all of them. Buddy Rose, maybe the best heel of all time. The way that we think of certain territories and people that anchor those territories, the way that Hogan was the anchor of WWF in the 80s, the way that Ric Flair was the NWA guy in the 80s. Buddy Rose was the Portland anchor. Okay, Jerry Lawler was the anchor in Memphis. Ted DiBiase was the anchor in Mid-South, you know, along with Junkyard Dog and Jim Duggan. Buddy Rose was that guy in Portland. You put him up against anybody, guys that had no business having great matches, he had great matches with. And the only reason we know that Buddy Rose was such a great wrestler is that Buddy Rose was so vain that he was one of the first guys to get a VCR so he could tape his own matches. And his huge accumulated run of his matches from like 1978 up until 1984, maybe 83, somewhere around that time period, were in Buddy's garage. And so, you know, here's a guy who loves himself, you know, and here he is. He recorded all of his matches for us to discover, you know, decades later.
Now tell
me, Buddy Rose,
as a guy who was first introduced to Buddy Rose via the Blow-Away Diet and via WWF house shows that I attended in 1990. And now I know, you know, since I've obviously learned about him, I've seen, you know, some of his AWA stuff. What is the Buddy Rose match we need to go back and watch?
Well, that's a little bit harder because in terms of tag matches, him and Summers had a great series of matches against the Midnight Rockers and the AWA in 86 and 87. If you watch those, you will not be disappointed. Those are great matches, especially if you like blood and big bumps, and even you got the high flying and the cage is there for, you know, some exciting stuff. So those are there. Buddy Rose in earlier Portland had classic matches with Roddy Piper, classic matches with Adrian Adonis, classic matches with Kurt Hennig. A very young Dynamite kid was there. Buddy Rose tagged with a guy called Ed Wiskowski, who other fans might know as a guy named Colonel De Beers mm-hmm. from the AWA run, the South African racist. But in Portland, he was just Ed Wiskowski, you know, kind of a hippie gimmick. So there are multiple Buddy Rose matches. And eventually, you know, we might even put together a list of, like, the rankings of the best Portland matches. And if we can get that list together, then it'll be clear, like, what Buddy matches will go into the canon.
15 minutes remaining. 15.
We'll go into the canon as, like, the best Buddy matches.
All right. Let's go to number where are we at? Number three here. So this one, I think, may be a little unpopular with some different areas of the internet, because I think this is the divisiveness in this guy's style a little bit here and there, and that's Kurt Angle, a guy that's in my, you know, I dipped a little bit when I went to college, but in part of my renaissance, my reinvigoration of being a wrestling fan, when I found a group of friends in college that got as back into it as I did, he was the man in 2000, 2001, 2002. His run in 01 is one of my favorite single years for a wrestler in WWF company history. You know, he comes in, wins a world title. Then lost the world title, rather, No Way Out, that great match with The Rock. Then he comes in and does all the stuff with Austin and McMahon, all, you know, the hugging and the sheriff hats and all that shit, in the midst of having great matches with Chris Benoit, the cage match on Raw, the match with Shane McMahon at King of the Ring, that violent mess, all the way through the rest of 01, and then 02 again having a great series of matches, and his character work in 01 and 02 was just off the charts as well. A guy that could blend comedy and intensity and being serious and hated and loved all at the same time, and a guy that didn't have a lot of training and was really, you know, inspirational as a wrestling fan for how quickly he picked up the business, you know, amazingly became such a great talent in the ring. And I know he has his flaws, whether it comes to selling or, you know, that pace that he works, where he'll, you know, pop up on these crazy moves and his propensity to work, you know, a million billion crazy spots in each match. But, but you know, I know all that. And that's why I loved him, because he didn't give a fuck. You know, he went out and just did whatever he wanted to do and had these exciting matches that had the crowds into it. And then he'd go backstage and have you laughing your ass off. So Kurt Angle, always a favorite of mine. I own about 17 Kurt Angle shirts from 2001. Just one of my favorites during that run. You know, sad he you know, I legitimately feared for him in 2006 when they released him. I was upset when he went to TNA because I didn't want to see him, you know, get sick or whatever, you know, have an, you know, whatever, lead to an ugly demise. And thankfully he, you know, had his issues, but he avoided any kind of peril. I even wrote a piece for PlaceMediation.com begging him to get his shit together after he got that DUI a few years ago. So just a guy, to me, has always been a personal favorite. I love his run from 2000 to 2002 and will always just hold a special place in my wrestling heart.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys who criticizes Kurt Angle
I know
for
you are.
Those things.
But I know and accept it. You know what I mean?
It's okay, because I am going to pick for my number three the anti-Kurt Angle. And this guy is not actually a North American wrestler. And just so people know, we're not doing Mexican wrestlers, because we could spend an entire half hour just on Lucha.
You would spend 3 hours on El Dandy alone. So,
no, I would. El Dandy would be right here in my number three list. We'd have to bump Buddy Rose and Ricky Steamboat down the slot as well as anyway, number three, the anti-Kurt Angle. The guy where every move means something, where he doesn't always move at a fast pace, but the minute he makes contact with his opponent, you see it on the TV screen, and you know his opponent felt it, and that's William Regal, yes. Or Steven Regal,
yep.
Lord Steven Regal. JR, you watched those 1994 matches with me. Regal did an amazing job carrying Johnny B. Badd. He had a great sprint with Brian Pillman that year. Him and Ric Flair on TV wrestled what they called the Duchess of, was it Queensberry?
Well, that was rules. The Jericho one. Did they use the same one for both?
It was the same, yeah. But this was a previous one where they kind of wrestled a series of matches.
Mm-hmm.
you know. And
also the Arn Anderson match, a Super Brawl, which is fantastic.
The match of the year contender with Arn Anderson at Super Brawl, which was a living. I call it like if you've ever seen Harry Potter, where they play chess, you know, but the chess players are really
yes.
killing each other. That's what that match is. It's a live game of chess. And he had one of the feuds of the year in 1994 against Larry Zbysko. And I believe I did send you that footage, right? The
yep.
Larry Zbysko feud. So, and him and Larry Zbysko, what was amazing about that feud that year. And I'm touching on this stuff because I want to touch on stuff that maybe some of the Place to Be Nation hasn't seen yet. You know, I think they're familiar with his work.
10 minutes to go. 10 minutes.
So I wanted to just touch on that. His feud with Larry Zbysko, what I loved about that feud was that every match was worked differently. You had a kind of a classic pay-per-view match with the run-ins and whatnot. You had a sprint. You had like the slow-paced technical match, and then you had the nasty brawl. And so I just love that feud. I love Regal as a wrestler. The more I watch him, the more I think he might be the smartest wrestler who ever lived. So there we go.
And a guy that could still, and is still used really well today, is the NXT GM. Hopefully he does that match. I mean, they kind of teased the match with him and Kevin Owens, and that would be a great match if they went through
it. If they did that at a TV taping, man, it's going to be a great match.
I think Will may fly down or fly over to Orlando just to see that taping.
I'm kind of old, and I might have a heart attack, man. I don't know. Be able to handle that kind of stress.
All right.
All right. Who's your number two, buddy?
Number two, I think, falls along the lines of Kurt Angle in that he has become very divisive over the years. Had two separate runs, and I'm really focused on the first one, which is where he places on this list, and that's the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels. So a guy I was a big, big, big Rockers fan when I first got in 1990. My cousin and I used to pretend we were the Rockers. We wrestled our wrestling buddies all the time. We'd argue over who was Shawn, who was Marty. I rewatched him throwing Jannetty through the glass window millions of times back in the day when I only had like, you know, seven tapes. So I relived.
Can I interrupt you, JR?
Yes. Yep.
I love how your list is like my anti list.
Oh, I know.
This is great. This is great. But continue, because my number two, when you hear my number two is, it's going to crack you up.
I knew coming in that this is how these lists would go, because I'm such a freaking Dodie F. Homer. But the first Shawn run. So, you know, then he turns heel, and I loved him right away as the cocky guy. And, Will, you'll get to know all about WCF as we do this show. WCF was my backyard wrestling promotion, and my buddy Josh was Sexy Steve, a ripoff of Shawn Michaels. I was, you know, and I always envisioned myself as the Diesel because I was bigger than him, and he was a little scrawny guy. But, you know, so Shawn and Diesel were like it for us. We love Shawn and Diesel. You know, the ladder match at 10 and then into 95, 96, and everyone knows it's a great career. But a guy just, I just always enjoyed. And again, I know he's got the same issues along the lines of Kurt. And I know his second run here in the 2000s, on the surface, opposite of the surface, when you dive into it, I know, again, a lot of flaws in his matches around selling and whatnot. But on the surface, to have the two runs he had, whether or not you really dig his matches, but what he did coming back, whether he was injured or not all that time, to come back and have another 8-year run on top with the breadth of matches he had, with the different contenders he battled with, his matches with Undertaker, WrestleMania, those two at 25 and 26 to go out. I mean, just an amazing thing for him. So as a big time WWF fan growing up, you know, he was one of my favorites to watch. And again, this list is our favorites. So one of my favorites.
It's our favorites.
No
judgment. In fact, you know, you say favorite. I really enjoyed the Jericho feud that he had.
Yes. Yep.
And I enjoyed the Ric Flair retirement match. I know a lot of people like don't like the Shawn Michaels melodrama, like where he talks in the ring, you know, that drives people nuts. I enjoyed both of those. Let's go to my guy. He is the anti-Shawn Michaels. He is not the sexy boy. He is not the pretty boy. He is the old man. And another guy, when I was a child, could not stand him, thought, what the hell is this old man with chicken legs doing in my ring, has no business being there, and that's Dirty Dick Murdoch. Okay? And people who are not familiar with Dirty Dick Murdoch, he's a brawler. He's a mat technician. He is I don't want to call him the perfect wrestler, but he could be if he wanted to be. You know, if you want to, if you enjoy mat work and seeing a guy dissect someone else's limb, he could do it. If you want to see a guy brawl and bleed and punch someone in the face, he could do it. He was a great tag team wrestler, had great tag teams with Adrian Adonis. They even held the WWF World Tag Team title, I think it was 1984, I think it was. Had a great tag team in the old Bill Watts UWF with Eddie Gilbert. You know, he was tag partners with Dusty Rhodes back in the 70s.
Yep.
You know, so a lot of people know Dick Murdoch from his run with Dusty Rhodes, or that's how they know of him. But the guy, to me, defines
5 minutes
the
remaining,
word,
guys.
Defines
5 minutes.
The word wrestler. Dick Murdoch, we're going to talk a lot more about him. In fact, myself, Chris Zellner, and David Bixenspan did an entire podcast here on the Place to Be Nation. I want to say it's under the Goodwill Wrestling banner. Mm-hmm. Look it up, and it's the case for Dick Murdoch for the Hall of Fame. Let's go. Let's go to our number ones.
All right. I think we're going to, you know, we went on divergent paths, and now we're going to meet back at the top. And I don't know if this guy's your number one, but I know you're not going to hate me for choosing him because we just talked about him for a half hour, and that's the Macho Man Randy Savage. A guy that I loved at the time, and then going back and rewatching, I've grown even more appreciation of. A guy that had more emotionally charged storylines than anyone else in WWF history. Every storyline was this long arcing story with all this great, you know, build, all this great drama. They sucked you in, whether it was with Ricky Steamboat when he put him out with the throat injury, whether it was with Hulk Hogan with the Mega Powers and Elizabeth, whether it was with you know, the Ultimate Warrior with the retirement match, Jake the Snake when he came back, Ric Flair in 92, then DDP in 97. I mean, so many feuds and angles that had so much emotion behind it. And his promo skills, second to none. I mean, you can go back and watch prime times from 86, 87, 88 just to watch the inane promos he would cut each and every week. The, you know, Condominium on the Moon, the Cream of the Crop, they're all classics. The awesome ones he did it, you know, Tuesday in Texas after Jake slapped Elizabeth. WrestleMania 8 after Flair, after he beat Flair. Just so many top-notch moments. So many just hidden gems of matches that he had either on TV or on, you know, Coliseum Video here and there. And a guy that is a true legend that finally got his due this year at the Hall of Fame, and a guy that left us way too early.
And JR, you only touched on his WWF
right.
moments. You didn't even touch
Memphis.
On his Memphis moments.
Yes, awesome stuff in Memphis, too. The,
okay,
the infamous
where
chicken
he had...
Coop.
3 minute warning.
Had a great match with Jerry Lawler. Had a great series of matches with Jerry Lawler.
And one of the original invasion angles too, with you know, the Rogue,
yeah, right.
his dad's company and everything.
That's right. So, you know, so you had Savage doing that. Had good matches with Ron Garvin, who people know as a former NWA champion and a guy who opposed the Horseman. But yes, my number one does tie into your number one because he used to battle Randy Savage in Memphis, and that's Jerry Lawler, my favorite wrestler of all time and the guy who I argue is the best wrestler of all time. A lot of people who might listen to Place to Be Nation only know Lawler from the annoying color commentator on Raw. You're missing out. I even went back and looked at some of the WWF run that he had, and I know a lot of people aren't really high on his WWF run because of the stupid premises, his evil dentist, Isaac Yankum, the Kiss My Foot match, a lot of stupid stuff. But Jerry Lawler for 20 years, actually, you know what, for 30 years, I'd say from 74 till mid-thousands, he was the king of Memphis. Jerry Lawler is one of the biggest bumpers in history, and he's shown some of it. He's shown glimpses of it on WWF TV, but this is a guy that if you needed to push him down the top of the arena, he would roll all the way down the arena. You know, this is a guy who had no problem flying over the top rail. I mean, we give Triple H, you know, props for doing that, like over the top bump or kind of that Sergeant Slaughter tribute bump. Jerry Lawler took those two.
1 minute to go.
Jerry Lawler was one of the best sellers in wrestling. That anytime Lawler got hit, he would show the accumulated damage of the punishment he was taking. He is by far the best puncher in wrestling history. If you value punches that look real, nobody's better than Jerry Lawler. He's had so many classic feuds that for four decades, he carried on a feud with Bill Dundee. He had classic feuds with Terry Funk, Dutch Mantell, Randy Savage, Kurt Hennig, a one-legged Kerry Von Erich, the Moondogs, with entire companies, with WWF and ECW. Jerry Lawler had some of the most amazing feuds in wrestling history. Jerry Lawler could carry more wrestlers than anyone else that we know. He had great matches with people like King Kong Bundy, Kamala. It didn't matter. He would get the best out of his opponent and work to his opponent's strength. And Jerry Lawler is the best wrestler of all time.
It's funny, too. One thing that's worth checking out for even just a glimpse of is Memphis character work with Andy Coffin. Remember that special that was on E? Do you ever see that one a long time ago? Oh, they ran that thing all the time. I never see it anymore, though.
I have it. I have a copy of it. Yeah,
I need a copy of that.
We'll talk about it off the air, but I have a copy of it.
Okay, so two things quick just to put a bow on that segment. One guy we didn't mention, either of us, Ric Flair. So Parv is going to punch a hole through the wall, I'm sure, when he hears this. So
we said favorites, not the best. And if you noticed, my list was either people that I've kind of discovered later in life or that I was a fan of as faces when I was a kid growing up. Ric Flair was a heel. I hated heels growing up. That's why my... list is not going to have a lot of heels that I didn't like in the 80s. You know, no Tully Blanchards, no Ric Flairs, no Arn Andersons. I hated those guys growing up. I wanted them to lose. They're not my favorites. But now I love all of those guys, but back in the day.
And you are a heel. Dan, do you have a top five you can give us real quick? Putting you on the spot.
It mostly involves Bushwhackers.
All right.
Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
Sheep herders, not Bushwhackers. We're not getting into that here, though. So why don't we go ahead, we'll take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to play our last challenge.
Papa Shango.
We're going to do our mailbag, the Berserker. We're going to do our mailbag, and then Mantar. We're also going to talk about our Get the F Out program, because Will and I, notorious F-bomb droppers. I think I even hit one during that segment. But we're going to talk about what we're going to do on this show to eradicate that. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.
Places, Rolex with wood faces, had you jipper for months. Made some dough, did some shows, now you're starting to front. Smoke.
I'd like to have right
now. Chad, do you want your wrestling podcast to be informed by historical and analytical insight and by obsessive watching of footage from any era and any promotion and for them all to be available on one feed?
Sure do, Parv.
Chad, are you ready to shill?
I am, because I know you're talking about the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
Let's go through that again. PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
Got it. That's where you can listen to all sorts of different shows covering the history of pro wrestling in detail.
Shows like Titans of Wrestling with my boys Pete, the man of a 10,000 discs, and Kelly, the jobber lover.
I'm a jobber lover.
Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham.
Join me, Stephen Graham.
The smash hit wrestling game show Brainbuster with
Johnny Sorrow.
We have a host of top contributors like wrestling historian Chris Zellner.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Zellner here, starting a new podcast venture.
And the Pro Wrestling Only admins, the man who knows more about 90s wrestling than maybe anybody on earth, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
This is Will, and I'm joined today by my good buddy Charles.
Whether it's the territories, WWF, NWA, Mid-South, Texas, Portland, tag team wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha, old school, new school, we got it.
And, of course, the feed still has the mothership itself,
where the big boys play,
on which we continue our endless journey through WCW Supercards.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. It's pro wrestling only.
You know you want to hear it.
All right, Place to Be Nation, we are back here at the Dangerous Wrestling Alliance Podcast, Episode 1. Hope you're having a good time. I know Will, Dan, and myself are. We got two falls down. We got a third of the way. But, Will, let's quickly talk about the get the F out swear jar. So, you and I are notorious for dropping F-bombs on all these podcasts. Really, really bad. I get yelled at by Steve Willie's kids all the time for my usage of F-bombs. And, you know, I try to listen to a lot of these podcasts on the go, and a lot of times I have my daughter with me, and, you know, you got Will saying F this, F that all over the place, and I got to quickly lower it. It even affected Scott when he was on the shows with you guys for WrestleMania. He started dropping them left and right. So here's what we're going to do. Dan McGinn, we're going to start now, so I'm going to discount the one I dropped earlier. I want you to track if either of us say the F word on the show. And then at the end of, what do you want to do? 6 months, we'll call it. We'll call it the end of the year. December 31st, Will. Whoever has said more F-bombs has to purchase 1 month of the other for WWE Network. How's that sound?
I have no problem with that whatsoever.
All right. So a real challenge on our hands here. Dan will be tracking our F-bombs. Loser, $10 payment for WWE Network for the winner. All right, Dan, what is the stipulation for fall number three?
Our third and final fall is called Living the Gimmick, and the man that we're going to be talking about today is none other than John Tenta.
Okay, so this is an interesting one. So the game here, Will, is really the challenge, I should say, is really talk about the gimmicks of a certain wrestlers. And what we're going to do, we picked John Tenta for a couple of reasons. One is because he's had a lot of gimmicks that we can dive into, and a lot of, you know, it wasn't controversial, but a lot of kind of, you know, ridiculed gimmicks by many. But the reason we picked Tenta, too, is you and I are big fans of this guy. We discovered that watching those 94 WCWs together, that you and I are both big fans of his work across his career, whether it's WWF or WCW.
Or Justin, I mentioned, All Japan.
Right, yes.
Was a great wrestler because he came out of the sumo school and cut his teeth in All Japan Wrestling, and he was amazing younger. I wish WWF wouldn't have given him the gimmicks, which we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was seriously a really great wrestler. I kind of wish they would have given him more of a legitimate title, you know. But I'm sorry to get off track. Go back to what we were saying.
I was saying. So I'm going to have Dan start the clock, and then we're going to dive into a look at the many faces of John Tenta. So like you mentioned, Will, and I'm going to let you kind of talk about this stuff first. So he goes to All Japan, leaving sumo after a quick run there. Trains under Baba, made his debut in 1987. Share with us some of your thoughts on his All Japan run, and then we'll get into his gimmicks in America.
Well, All Japan TV didn't really feature him in any singles matches. He was mainly in tag matches. But he felt like an old pro. He felt like he knew where he was supposed to be in the ring. He wasn't a guy who missed spots or felt out of place. You see where I'm coming? He was a guy who, because of his size and his power, and you know, in Japan, the reputation is in Japan, those guys aren't taking it easy on you. So, you know, they're knocking the crap out of you. So he gave as much as he got,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he was a great striker. His powerful moves looked powerful. And he's, like I said, we only have tag matches from that period. We didn't really get to see him featured in any singles matches, but he looked like somebody, you know, they say that like Kurt Angle, when he first came in, he was a natural. He just got it. John Tenta, that early in his career, looked like a guy who just got it.
And he was scooped up by the World Wrestling Federation in 1989. So he had a dark match in September, as Earthquake Evans, managed by Slick, and that was short-lived, made his TV debut in November. And do you remember, Will, how he first showed up in Wheeling, West Virginia that night on the Superstars taping?
I don't, but you're going to refresh my memory.
So, in-ring interview with Mean Gene, Dino Bravo challenges the Ultimate Warrior to a strength competition. They do push-ups, and they invite this man to come to the ring, this giant man that was in the crowd. He sits on Warrior's back so he could do the push-ups, or sits on Bravo's first, dubbed as John from West Virginia. Sits on Bravo's back first, he does the push-ups, and then during Warrior's, he jumped down onto Warrior with what would become his Earthquake Splash. It was revealed that he was a plant by Jimmy Hart and was pushed as a Canadian Earthquake, eventually just the Earthquake. So he remained as Earthquake with Jimmy Hart as a heel from his debut in 89 into early 92, and in part, you know, in part of that run was his big feud with Hulk Hogan in 1990. Then he would team up with Tugboat, becoming Typhoon as the Natural Disasters. They had a feud with the Legion of Doom, and then would eventually turn face and win the title. So let's first talk about him as a heel. Do you have any specific memories of his run? in that heel role. What are your thoughts on his feud with Hogan in 90, which I think is often overlooked as one of Hogan's better feuds during that run, especially during the later era of Hulkamania? They had a really fun match at SummerSlam with those nasty welts on Earthquake's back from the stool that Hogan whacked him with.
Yep.
Anything in particular that stands out from you during his initial heel run as Quake?
Yes. The Hogan stuff was fun. And I liked the way they put him over as a serious threat, you know. Do you remember that, you know, Hulk Hogan was supposedly in the hospital?
Oh,
and
God.
The WWF even gave you an address where you could write Get Well Hulkster cards to.
That video, you know, I started watching very early in 90, so that video was one of the first, like, emotional storylines I saw as a 9-year-old. I mean, I cried, man, watching that. Because that video, they'd have him doing all this charity work, and they're playing Real American, and then the music would stop, and this ominous music would hit, and they'd show Earthquake just crushing him, and, the crucifix falling off his neck. And it was, I mean, for a brand new wrestling fan at age 9, that was just like an immediate culture shock.
Well, you know, this is just going to reinforce our age difference here, JR. One of my earliest memories of wrestling was the Freebird angle where they hospitalized Ted DiBiase in Georgia, where they gave him 3 pile drivers, and then they would show DiBiase being interviewed from the hospital room.
Did you cry? And
I don't remember crying, but I do remember wanting to write him to tell him to get better and to get those Freebirds, you know, that we needed him back in the ring. But, you know, then you know, my parents are ever careful of my psyche, you know. We're not going to waste our money on that, you know. We're not going to waste a stamp on that. That's fake. Don't you know it's fake? 6 years old, man. I'm supposed to tell a 6-year-old it's fake, but they made sure I knew early. I didn't believe them. I thought my parents were just jerks. But no. But anyway, back to Earthquake. Sorry, I just had to mention that story. Back to Earthquake. I thought that it was incredibly well done. But clearly, right, the feud that makes this heel run is the Jake the Snake.
Yes.
Feud. Okay. And this is the feud where Earthquake kills Damien. Now, you got to remember, Damien had been around since Jake debuted
mm-hmm.
in 1985, 86. When did he? Like 85-ish, 86-ish, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Damien and Jake went hand in hand. Nobody had ever. I mean, Andre the Giant didn't kill Damien. You know, in fact, Andre was deathly afraid of Damien. And this guy comes and gives Damien, what, 2-3 Earthquake splashes? They had to bleep it off TV. You know, they couldn't show this censored footage on TV. And to make things worse, in a future episode of Primetime, Earthquake serves Vince McMahon. And I want to say Lord Alfred was there. I don't remember who was on the set.
Heenan was usually there too on Primetime.
But I think but Heenan was Heenan was still a heel though, right?
Right. So maybe he was partaking in the.
I'm sure Heenan was there, but he was celebrating. They serve Vince McMahon Damien burgers.
Yep, snake burgers.
The snake burgers, and to me, I thought this is the most absurd, but plausible scenario that could ever happen.
I remember still angle. The face Jake made when he opens the bag, and then he's like just crushed by what happened to Damien. And I think they said what was like hamburger meat stuffed in like stockings or something to make it, you know, look like it. And he had another great angle in Superstars a couple months after that. So first, as part of the snake thing, he was in the barbershop and Beefcake buckled him into the chair and then threw the fake snake on him. And he like flipped over the barber chair. But then the really good segment was on Superstars when Andre the Giant was supposed to be coming back, and he was auditioning new managers, and he had turned down Jimmy Hart, and Jimmy got pissed
because
he got turned down, and Quake beat the shit out of Andre on Superstars and busted his leg up. So that was another great Quake heel moment.
And then whenever you would see Andre, he'd always he'd walk with the cane.
Yep. He was on the crutches and the cane.
Yeah.
And that's,
The crutches. I'm sorry.
And that he had those at SummerSlam 91. He was with the Bushwhackers. So that was around that time that Quake hooked up with Typhoon. In 92, he'd go face. And I liked his face run, too, with Typhoon, because they were like these happy, the jovial big friggin' nasty assholes. You know what I mean? Like, they get in the ring and beat the crap out of you, but coming down to the ring, they're smiling, tagging hands, and really confident in their size. And it was a unique take on a face team to have such big guys. And at times, it didn't work because watching them sell and be in peril for teams like the Beverly Brothers and Money Inc. could be awkward at times. But I thought, like, character-wise, like, they were pretty solid as faces.
They were solid. I'm not a fan of Typhoon. I'm not a fan of his work. The Shockmaster, as he would assume. We're going to have to talk about the Shockmaster on a future.
Yes.
Living the gimmick, right? I mean, but we're, you know, I wasn't a fan of Typhoon. You know, I almost wish they would have done what they did with Owen and when they paired Owen with Yokozuna.
Yep.
You know, and kind of given him the big guy, small guy dynamic.
Repo Man.
You know, no, oh, come on.
All right, Barry Dawson may be our next living the gimmick.
When we do our worst wrestlers or wrestlers we hate the most, my number one I'm giving away right now is Barry Darso. I think he is the most worthless wrestler that has ever lived. But no,
great theme songs though.
Yeah, but you could. I don't care about his theme songs. Anyway, I wish they would have given him a smaller guy.
Yeah.
That could have been his tag partner. That who could have generated that heat. You know, could have gotten beat up to you know eventually make that hot tag where Earthquake cleans up and you know kind of saves the day. And then they could have done you know some cool big man little man tag team double teams and you know I don't know man I'm just not a big fan of the Typhoon Earthquake pairing. You know I don't. Like you said, it made for awkward situations mm-hmm. when you have to sell for the Beverly Brothers. Come on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that match of Survivor 92 was kind of awkward to watch where and Beverly.
Yeah. It's just, you know, I mean, Earthquake, he was an ass kicker, you know? And so if that's what he's going to be, then, you know, you always say, you know, you want to promote to guys' strengths.
20 minutes.
You want to promote to their strengths. And I don't think they did that with him there.
Right. And he, I remember being really surprised at the time because he turned face within weeks of The Undertaker turning face. And as a kid, to me, that was like a shock that both these guys were suddenly supposed to be beloved when they were two of the nastiest guys in 1991. You know, Undertaker had locked Ultimate Warrior in the casket and did the stuff with Jake the Snake. And all of a sudden we're cheering him. And then Earthquake, who had destroyed Hulk Hogan, killed Damian and Andre the Giant.
Right.
And now, you know, now he's this happy guy. But I think what made it work was that Jimmy Hart was so conniving and slimy that when he, you know, you believed that he screwed them out of their title match. And he made it work more than anything, I think.
Yeah, that might be true. And to be fair, Jimmy Hart never got to shine the way he did as right. in Memphis. For people who don't know, Jimmy Hart really is one of the best managers of all time. It just so happens that he peaked in Memphis because he was Jerry Lawler's number one arch enemy from 1981 through 1985. And so that's a shame. But Earthquake, as a gimmick for a WWF gimmick at the time, not like one of the worst gimmicks, right? Like actually a pretty good gimmick that he could have. Like what other gimmick in WWF, I mean, we're mm-hmm. going to talk about his WCW gimmicks and his return to WWF. But what other gimmick could you have given this guy in that time period? I mean, I guess you could have called him John the Earthquake Tenta, kind of like Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Right.
Or, you know, Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog. Like, I don't have a problem if they would have kept his name. I mean, or, you know, maybe given him a kayfabe name or something. I don't know.
I think he took what could have been a goofy name and a goofy idea and made it work because he was so legitimate and that he, you know, kicked ass so much and that he had made such an impact when he first came in and he was a decent promo. Like, I think he got through having the name Earthquake and actually made the name Earthquake seem kind of cool because it was him. I think what hampered him, honestly, and this is just from me looking at it as a kid watching with a time, was his hair and his, you know, face.
Just because he looked like an old man, he wasn't very photogenic, you know?
Yeah, you know, and it's fine if he's ugly because he's a heel. But, you know, to me, he didn't look like a young, vibrant star on the rise. He looked like just this old guy that came in that's bald with his mullet.
Yes.
And I feel like if he had even just like, I don't know, Maybe he was just completely bald and didn't have the balding hair, and then you didn't know if he, you know, just had his head shaved. Like, I feel like he would have looked maybe a little bit younger. He just always looked old to me, which is fine, but it didn't scream like a guy that could be like a top heel for a long time, because he looked like he just didn't have that much of a look behind him. And or, I'm not even talking about how fat he is. I'm talking more of just his hair and his face.
No, no, you're right. It's not. It's like a, what do you call it? A face only a mother could love, right?
Right.
You know. But you know, I'm sure Vince McMahon in his arrogance thought, well, hell, I made the Bushwhackers faces, you know, and you know, I mean, I'm sure there are worse looking faces in WWF history than
that old
John
man.
The old man, yeah, I don't know, maybe. I mean, did Dick Slater come in as a face as
he
the
did.
Rebel, or was he a heel?
I think he was a face.
You know, I mean, come on, man.
I know Hogan, guy, I guess, had a similar haircut to Quake, but he also had the body. Anyway.
Hulk Hogan had the body, man. I mean, yeah, but either way, I get your point there,
right.
But there are ways to make that work. One,
sure.
Like I said, if you have maybe a young, good-looking partner there working with him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where, like, he's the pretty boy, he's the nasty, you know, that kind of dynamic. Maybe you have this guy protecting the little engine that could.
Well,
you know,
I have a
then
guy
it could
too.
Work.
I have
Who's
a guy
that?
In mind.
Who?
If so,
as
we're looking
as
at
Barry Darso or
no.
or IRS, man, I'm all over it.
So we're looking at it from a face perspective, right?
Sure.
Okay, because I have a guy that could have been a cool face teammate for him in '92, and then Quake turns on him, and they have a fun little series before Quake leaves in '93, and that's Owen Hart. So you have Owen come in, Neidhart leaves, and he's like, oh, you know, I need another guy. You play up maybe Earthquake's, you know, Canadian roots. Brett goes
sure.
to Quake backstage. Hey, man, you know, you mind protecting my brother, looking after him? You know, I'm you know, in the midst of this IC or whatever. I don't, you know, he could use a new tag partner. Neidhart abandoned him. So Quake takes him on. They do exactly what you said. They have he's a good-looking, young, energetic guy. Quake is his protector.
Remaining.
Quake is his protector, and then Quake turns on him. And you do kind of a rehash of the, you know, the Singh Owen Hart feud from Stampede with, you know, Owen. We know he works well with big guys like Quake, and they have a really hot feud into '93.
I like the Owen idea, except that Owen and Yoko had done it. You know, we need to come up with someone else besides Owen.
Well, not
we
face,
have...
not face Owen though. So this is before Owen and Yoko.
True, that's true. Oh, and maybe that's why that tag team didn't work as well as it should have.
Right.
You know, because Owen Yoko is a decent tag team, but they don't have any classics out there.
Well, it worked okay because Owen got to do the reverse where Yoko did all the dirty work, and he would just be like the smarmy heel that got the pin and celebrated like a nut, even though Yoko was the guy that was picking up the wins.
Yeah, but do you disagree that they don't really have the amount of classic matches that other tags?
Yeah, I just don't know if that's their fault when you look at the tag division in '95 and who they had to work with. I mean. You know, Ally Powers, I guess, they had an okay match with. The Guns matches actually weren't too bad. And even their match with Shawn and Diesel isn't well, I guess that ended up being Bulldog. But, you know, if you look at some of the other teams they faced on Raw and stuff, they didn't really have that deep of a roster to work with.
Okay, then JR, I understand where you're coming from with Owen. But how about this guy? A guy with good looks.
Coco Beware.
Can play face. Coco Beware was a great wrestler in Memphis, too. Sorry to get sidetracked. Good looks, baby face. Depending on the time frame, going to lose his tag partner, Marty Jannetty.
Yeah, it's another good option.
You know, and, you know, Marty Jannetty was a great wrestler. You know, if he was clean, I mean, or just if he wasn't, you know, incapacitated, the guy was a great wrestler.
Maybe that's the angle. Earthquake tries to get him clean. He's like,
oh no,
like
no,
902
no.
And
we really need to keep alcoholism related angles out of wrestling.
Like,
I think it ruined that CM Punk Chris Jericho feud. You know, we were talking about Jerry Lawler earlier. I thought that it was just so distasteful. The Lawler Jake angle, you know, no, we need to keep alcohol out of these angles unless it's Steve Austin smashing beers together. Keep the
well, I'm picturing it like
alcoholism out of the ring.
I'm picturing it like on 90210 when David Silver's got the friggin' coke and Dylan comes in to help him save him because the cops are coming over. He's flushing it down the toilet. So that's what it is. We got Marginetti in the
yeah,
bathroom.
There you go.
And, you know, the drug testers to come in and tend to flush it down the toilet, try to get him straightened up. So I mean, it wasn't COVID, it was a speed. I think he was doing speed anyway.
That's hilarious. Anyway, I mean, okay. So, I mean, so I'm thinking, honestly, a Marty Jannetty, you know, and that might have revitalized Jannetty's career, you know, teaming with Earthquake. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Jannetty would have worked too. I don't see why not. I think that's a good choice. I think anyone in that little man, big man role that we're talking about could have definitely been intriguing in place of what we had with the disasters. But let's we're clocking away here. So why don't we head to WCW? So he has a little bit more time in WWF, comes back for a really quick cup of coffee in 94, does the sumo match with the Yokozuna on Raw, and then leaves, debuts at Halloween Havoc 94 after Hogan retires Flair, and Beefcake is revealed to be the Butcher, to be the guy who stabbed Hogan in the back. He butchered a friendship. And then, it's like an avalanche in here as the Avalanche made his debut and squashes Hogan. We get the Three Faces of Fear with Kevin Sullivan, Butcher, and Avalanche. He has the series with Sting, a couple of matches with Savage. And then we'll go from there in a minute. But what did you think of his initial... I mean, did you think it was super hokey that he came in as Avalanche, you know, basically the same as Earthquake?
Well, I don't hate the Avalanche name.
Right.
You know, only in regards to, it was clearly, okay, what other natural disaster can we give this guy?
Right.
Yeah. Typhoon's already been taken. Earthquake's already been taken. Well, why not an Avalanche? You know, the tornado's already been taken with Kerry Von Erich. Can't have that. The Avalanche. Yeah, that's great, because he falls on you like an avalanche falls on you. And he's from the north. And anyway, man, it's just absurd. Come on. I mean, but I don't hate the name, honestly. I think the Avalanche is a perfectly fine gimmick if it's John the Avalanche Tenta, right?
10 minutes, you know, remaining. 10 minutes.
I don't mind having that Avalanche moniker on him.
Yeah, you know, and he has decent matches. He has that one match with Sting at Starrcade. I think we pegged that as one of the better matches of the night.
With one of the worst finishes, right?
Awful finish.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to sidetrack too much. Not that people don't expect that, but if WCW wasn't booked any worse in that time period, you know, I mean... I don't know, man. It just so frustrating, because we saw how that company fell from one of the greatest in-ring wrestling companies ever to one of the worst in like less than 3 months. It just, boom, stopped dead.
Like
in
an avalanche. It snowballed down.
Perfect.
So he loses to Sting at Starrcade by DQ, and then him and Bubba team up against Sting and Savage at Super Brawl, and they lose.
That's right.
And then he faced Savage at Uncensored in an unsanctioned, uncensored match, which he loses by disqualification. And then he has
WCW move, right?
Oh, awful. And then he has to drop the name because WWF threatened legal action due to the similarities with the Quake character. So he shows up as the Shark as part of the Dungeon of Doom that grew in 1995. He even changed his tattoo from the tiger to a shark.
Yes. Explain that. I mean, this is a guy who's an LSU Tiger, right?
Yep.
Is that what it was?
Yep.
Was that why he had the tiger? Because of LSU? Okay. Has this tiger. He says, okay, well, they're going to make me the Shark. Why would I have a tiger on my arm? Changes it to a shark tattoo.
24-hour tattoo update. Took him.
Oh, my God. And then, how long did the shark last?
So a little bit. Into early 96. So Fall Brawl, he's part of the Dungeon of Doom, Kamala, Zodiac, and Ming against one of the most lopsided matches of all time. So,
But still a cup of coffee, right?
Right. But inside War Games, this match is... It always makes me laugh how lopsided this match is. Kamala, Zodiac, and Kamala in 95. I'm not talking Kamala, you know, in Memphis or whatever. Kamala in 95. Zodiac, who is Brutus Beefcake. Ming, very good. And Avalanche. Versus Hogan, Savage, Luger, and Sting in a War Games match. Lopsided. Early 96, he showed up and said he was tired of wrestling in the Dungeon of Doom, tired of all these names and gimmicks he's been forced into, and he gives his memorable line, Will, I'm not the shark. I'm not a fish. I'm not an avalanche. I'm a man. And we then go under his real name of John Tenta. And this is a feud I was kind of reinvigorating your memory about a few days ago. It's yes. Great American Bash 96 and Bash of the Beach. He battled Big Bubba Rogers. Bubba, now in his biker gimmick, jumped Tenta on Nitro, cut his goatee off with a pair of scissors, and ended up like shaving and leaving Tenta with half a mustache and half a head of hair that Tenta keeps. So he wrestles with half his face shaven, half with hair, and they have the infamous Carson City Silver Dollar match at Bash of the Beach 96 with a bag of silver dollars is hanging from the pole.
Oh, God. Now, hey, I am all for a great put something on a pole match. You know, as long as it's not a Judy Bagwell, I'm fine with it. You know, put a coal miner's glove up on there, I'm in. You put Dutch Mantel's shoe baby whip up on there, I'm in. But come on, man. Carson City. Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, why not just a roll of quarters?
The winner gets unlimited trips on the carousel after with these roll of coins.
You get your free steak and shrimp dinner. You know, I mean, whatever, man. Come on. It's just, this is WCW is experiencing a resurgence. This is NWO era.
Right.
You know,
this is
cruisers coming in. This is.
And they had weird period where some of their 96, early 96 stuff bled into the NWO era before it was quickly phased out. And this is one of those things that was still hanging on as the NWO was getting going.
Right. And so, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think he could have probably done okay even then. You know, if they had treated him as a legitimate star, you know, which mm-hmm. he was, man. This is a guy who drew money. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know. It's just... I think the shark thing damaged him, the half a head of hair. I know that right when they did that, where he stopped being the shark.
Five more minutes.
Like the first thing they did was feed the guy to the giant, you know, yes, when they were trying to build the giant. That's the very first thing they did was feed him to a giant.
I mean, I guess in their defense, though, they did give him some pretty high-profile opponents. I mean, he started with Hogan, feuded with Savage and Sting, then with Giant. So... I mean, did they put him in a position to draw like big money matches? No, but they treated him fairly well when you look at the guys he fought against.
Yeah, that's true. And it was probably an easy payday for him. You know, I wonder if he got like one of those sweet deals where he didn't have to work for 6 months and he was just getting paid to sit at home, you know?
Well, he would lose those matches to the Giant, do the brief run with Piper with the family, and then Piper dumped them for the Horsemen, if you remember. Heading into Uncensored. So we have one last gimmick to talk about.
Hold on. But that's only because it was one of the worst segments ever in wrestling television.
Yes, the tryouts.
Right? Like there's the Roddy Piper tryouts. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like people don't know that this is Earthquake? Come on.
Right. I don't think they hid it, though. I thought they hid it? I thought they said who he was.
No, I know, but it was like... why would this guy have to try out though?
I guess.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That's the thing. It's not that they hit it. It's like I guess his star had fallen that far, but it just didn't feel like, I mean, the whole segment was a train wreck, but that's for another show. Okay. Go to the last gimmick before we run out of time and we don't get to ramble on about this.
Last gimmick was Golga, who debuted on May 25th, 1998, as one of the masked members of the Oddities. Of course, was originally brought out with the Jackal and with Howard Stern's, Whack Pack, if you remember the first time they were on.
ICP, Kurgan.
Yes, all them. Giant Silva. Of course, would quickly become, cartoony.
3 minutes left, guys. Three minutes.
And a comedy gimmick with the ICP song. They started carrying around the Cartman doll. Remember the Cartman shirt? That was his fascination. He had the weird divots under the mask to say they had like weird protrusions on his head. And he still has a pretty good match. Remember, he had slimmed way down too. He
did not look. Until years later, when I got on the internet, I didn't know it was the same guy.
Right.
I honestly had no idea. Yeah. I didn't know. Plus, I mean, they were hiding the shark tattoo, so how would you know?
I remember thinking at the time they missed out a little bit by not bringing him back at a better role. I thought he could have been a good, is similar to how they brought Boss Man back as a muscle for Vince. Maybe they could have done the same with him. Bring him in as John Tenta, the backup with Boss Man, something along those lines. Or even if they did Golga, then have him, you know, revealed and have him have a little quick run as Quake. But
maybe, but I think the mentality was that Boss Man could still go. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where Boss Man, you know, whether he had any
good matches. Well, I think Quake could too, though. I mean, I think.
But I don't think that in their head that he could.
Yeah, true.
You know what I mean? That's, you know, this is a different era. I mean, that Attitude Era, whether we criticize it or critique it or whatever, it's still more of a go-go era than the slower era that preceded it.
Yep.
That Earthquake is associated with. So, whereas Boss Man, I think, in their heads, well, you know, I mean, he's kind of a guy that they felt would fit into that time frame. And I don't think they felt that way with Tenta.
Well, he would have he'd show up one last time in WF at WrestleMania X7. He was at Earthquake in the back as Earthquake in the gimmick Battle Royal. And also had a tryout dark match in late 01 before SmackDown.
Really?
Yeah, they didn't end up signing him. And I remember that, thinking, oh, it'd be cool if they bring him back in 02. He would retire in 04 and reveal he developed bladder cancer, given a 20% chance to live. Kept going with chemo, and then radiation did not work. The tumor spread, and he passed away June of 07. Very sad. A guy that really was one of the first to embrace the internet message boards. Remember, he was big, really good friends with a guy from WrestleCrap. They had reached out to him, and he wrote a piece there, and he was on their radio show a few times.
Right, I do remember.
So he's one of the first guys that really kind of embraced the, you know, nostalgia time in the early 2000s, wrestlers looking back, and, you know, it became fun to poke a little fun at the early 90s, some of the late 80s, early 90s gimmicks, and he was in on the joke. So it seemed like a really down-to-earth, a really cool guy. Really sucks what happened to him, because he's a guy that probably would have gotten a lot more paydays down the road as a legend. He would, you know, I'm sure he probably would have been in the Hall of Fame by now, would have been on all these Raw reunions if he had stayed healthy.
At the very least, you know, he could have done a lot of these WrestleCon conventions and kept his name out there. You know, and supposedly, you know, guys from that era, you know, they make pretty decent money doing the conventions, you know, and, you know, at least, right, at the very least, he could have, like you said, done one of those Legends deals or, you know, been out there kind of like keeping the name alive, you know.
Time is up.
All right, quickly, Will, rank your John Tenta gimmicks.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? I want to say Earthquake, number one.
Yep.
Golga, number two. Shark, number three. And Avalanche, number four.
Okay, I'm with you on that. All right, before we get to our mailbag for this week, I want to just turn everyone's attention to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Tons of stuff going on there. Neil Trauma's Part 2, Walt Disney World Traveler, his PTB guide to Walt Disney World. Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walker on the Web. Exile on Bad Street, number 6, Part 2, The Price of Ridiculousness and the Death of Jim Crockett Promotions. These podcasts getting lots of love. It's Chris Zellner, David Bixenspan, and Dylan Hales, looking at the end days of JCP back in 88, around that era. So if you haven't tuned into these, set aside about half a day and dive in for a legitimate wrestling
Ain't
history
that the
lesson.
Truth.
By master's class lesson. By
no,
guys.
You will need half a day.
Yes, they are long, but they are well worth the listen. And also want to tune your attention into the Place to Be Network Rewind series for May. Ben Morse, my PIC, Scott Griscoll, along with Steve Willey and Glenn Butler, looked at Over the Edge 1998. So be sure to check that out. We have reviews of Mad Max, Fury Road, the movie that's out. Brian Bayless had his Raw Rundown review. PTBN's NBA Team podcast had a new episode up, as well as me and Scott looking back at SummerSlam 2004. So lots to love. PlaceToBeNation.com. Check it out. Tons of podcasts, tons of written articles. The only place to be in your pop culture world. Follow us on Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation. Twitter, place number 2BNation.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. We're going to cruise out, man. We're stealing people's mail. Stealing people's mail.
You've got mail.
All right, Dan, it is mailbag time. Set that clock at 15 minutes. Will and I are going to go through some questions here from both Pro Wrestling Only and the PTBN Facebook page. And we'll kick it over to Dan for question number one.
We'll start, guys, with Matt Davis. He writes a couple-part question. He writes, will Kevin Owens headline WrestleMania 32 in Dallas, Texas? And I'm using my quotation fingers, in the era of honor, three of the last four WrestleManias have seen a former ROH champion leave WrestleMania as the WWE champion. Will this unofficial tradition continue at 32?
No. What do you think, Will? That's my first thing.
Yeah, no. I think we're headed for a Roman Reigns Brock Lesnar rematch.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I mean, you gotta get the most out of Brock Lesnar, and right. You know he's gonna work a big main event at Mania. But that's where I would go. I would postpone the Roman Reigns coronation 1 year.
And I will say this. I mean, this my thought of saying no has nothing to do with anything with Kevin Owens and nothing to do with how they view Owens. Because I do think they view him as a guy that can be a star, obviously. I just think it's maybe a year too soon for them to have him there. I mean, even Seth Rollins was up for a couple years doing a lot of work with the Shield before he had this moment. And same with Daniel Bryan. He toiled for a while, Punk. So, I mean, it's not like those guys were all hot-shotted up to the top. Will, I asked Kevin Kelly this on every episode over the last few weeks. Do you think Hulk Hogan has a match at WrestleMania?
No.
How about Steve Austin?
Man, that's hard. You know what? Listening to Austin's podcast, I would say no. But, you know, how much money are they going to throw at the guy?
They have to, right? And if they want to legit sell out that stadium, are you going to go?
Yeah, I think I am. I mean, that's down the road, man. That's a road trip for me. So I don't have to get an airplane ticket. I think so.
Yes. We'll see. But yeah, I think Kevin Owens someday will probably main event at WrestleMania, especially as Triple H gains more and more power in the company. I mean, he's clearly a big fan of the guy. So what do you think, Will? Do you think Owens, how do you see that match ending this Sunday at Elimination Chamber between Owens and Cena?
Well, I see it ending with Cena raising his hand and Owens going quietly back to NXT.
You think he pins him?
Yeah, I do, unfortunately. Because, unfortunately, Vince McMahon will take notice of the booking sheets at the pay-per-view, you know, or the special event. And I don't think there's any way Vince McMahon lets an NXT guy get over on his number one merch seller.
I don't think Owens wins, but I don't think he gets pinned.
I mean, they kept Rusev unbeaten for nearly a year. Then they have Cena beat him three straight pay-per-views. So, I mean, I don't think that, you know, with Vince in charge,
I think they're only doing this just to pop subscribers because the free month ends, like, basically at the end of Elimination Chamber. So I think they're trying to hook people to see what Kevin Owens is about to try and get them into NXT.
See, I was thinking that they use the Elimination Chamber, mm-hmm. right, as the hook to get the subscribers to stay on. And that the Owens thing was, oh, by the way, since you've already gotten to see, you know, what the network's about, well, here's one of our NXT guys who puts up a valiant fight, but ultimately is below the superstars. I'm a very pessimistic person.
How would I
book it? I would book it, shock of all shocks. Anyways. You know, the NXT champion upsets the U.S. champion. That's how I would
book it. The thing is, if he wins, though, then you kind of have to keep him up there. But if he... I feel like he's not like a... That scenario you laid out where he loses a hard-fought match, like, that's more of a Zayn or a Neville like they did. I think they see Owens in that Rusev mold, in that just a guy that needs to remain super strong. And I think a loss to Cena kills a bit of his mystique when he goes back to NXT. So I think we get a schmazzy ending. I think, you know, could we see Samoa Joe come out or something like that? Or does someone interfere and cost Cena, like, you know, break up the match? Maybe Owens wins by DQ or count out. And then, you know, he denies Cena some kind of rematch and says, you come to NXT if you want me. You know, maybe do something like that.
Yeah, I think you're optimistic, bud, you know. Because I've been trying to book or fantasy book my favorites like CM Punk and Daniel Bryan and, you know, those guys into prominent positions for years. And usually they just let me down and make me
but
sad.
But I feel like they didn't have the backing that Owens has. I feel like Triple H will make a stand and say, this is my pet project. You are not jobbing him to John Cena at this pay-per-view.
I think you're wrong. And so now, having said that, we'll find out this Sunday. And I might be there live. I may or may not be there live. If I'm there live, then I'm going to call into the reaction show, give a live reaction, you know, on what it was like to be in the crowd. If I'm not, then, you know, we'll talk about it on the reaction show this Sunday.
All right. Look forward to that. Dan, what is mailbag question number two?
Mailbag number two comes from Barry Forrester, and sticking with this NXT theme, he goes, as NXT is emerging with all the next generation talent, who do you guys feel will be the top face and top heel to come from the NXT roster as the future stars of WWE?
I mean, I think Owens is clearly the top heel, obviously. I think that after what we just talked about, who do you think is the top heel to come off? Anyone besides Owens that you see? And well, let's let's do males right now, and we can take a minute and do females after.
I don't think we need to do females, but I think that it's so limited, right? Mm-hmm. That in the sense that they only feature so many people right now in NXT that you kind of are forced to say Owens,
right?
You
know,
I mean,
a guy like Tyler Breeze. You see him having any?
I think Breeze is amazing, but I don't see him as a top level guy. I see him as kind of like a mid card Sandal ish level guy, because I don't think Vince, as long as he's alive and in control, him and Kevin Dunn, I don't think that they'll promote someone like Tyler Breeze the way he should be.
How about on the face side?
Ah, man, it has to be Sami Zayn, right? But, you know, I mean, time will tell. I mean, I didn't think they would bring him up just to lose to John Cena in a hard-fought match either. You know what I mean?
Well, now he's out for a few months, so that's going to be delayed a bit. And the only reason I mentioned the female is because Sasha Banks, obviously, will be... I mean, you could argue she's the best heel or, you know, anything.
Yeah. I mean, Sasha Banks is amazing. Charlotte Flair is amazing. I mean, those women in NXT are amazing. But, you know, 2 years ago, Emma and Paige in NXT were amazing. Until WWE changes the way they view women on the main roster, I don't have a lot of hopes for them either. I think that there might be a slight improvement. But until those women are given a chance to have wrestling matches the way they are in NXT, I don't think it becomes successful at the main level. You know what I mean? Until they completely shift their paradigm on what women's wrestling should be, it doesn't matter.
I mean, I think, and Paige has been decently protected by them of all these women that come up. I mean, she had the feud and the whole stuff with AJ. She's in the movie. She hasn't suffered.
But still, I know.
It's not the same.
No classics. You know, I mean, her and Emma were having like really great matches, and there's nothing that she's done that could be classified as great. In fact, she kind of felt like she was really nervous in her debut. You know, and she didn't feel like a star when she debuted. I don't know. I mean, I see where you're coming from. We're trying to remain optimistic. I just don't have that much faith in the company to do the right thing.
And the key for the women, I mean, you kind of almost hope they stay in NXT until Triple H gains more power. Because I do think, just via Stephanie alone, there's going to be a push for the women. I mean, you're hearing more and more of it. They're standing up for more and more of it. They're main eventing NXT shows. You know, that one show in Philly, they main evented the Ronda Rousey stuff. So, I mean, I think there is more of a push. And if there's ever been a time where we're going to get legitimate presentation of the women in WWE, I think it's coming soon. I think we're almost there. And I think you're seeing it next time. I mean, there's that big profile today on WWE.com focusing on the four, you know, what they're calling now the four horsewomen of NXT. You know, Bayley, Sasha, Charlotte, and Becky Lynch. So,
yeah. Well, let's hope. Let's hope, because I am never opposed to more good wrestling. So,
all right, Dan. I think we can probably squeeze one more in here. What do we got?
Yeah, I'll save the best for last, and you'll have 5 good minutes to talk about it. This comes from the man, Mark Clare. He's requesting a scenario, and I'm not going to. I don't want to pay your $10 fee for your network, but he's requesting a marry, bleep, or kill, and he lists 3 women that you could either marry, bleep, or kill, and those three are AJ Lee, Lita, or 1996 Sunny.
Oh, man.
I'll take this one, Jeremy.
Go ahead.
All right. This is easy. You follow the CM Punk path. Okay? Okay. So you have Lita, you keep Lita around, right?
So you're effing Lita?
Sure. Okay. See, it was very hard for me not to swear there. You know, you marry AJ, and you kill Sunny because you know what she becomes. There you are. Done.
See, I can't do that. Because as a 15-year-old watching 1996 Sunny, her posters adorning my walls, Will, I mean, I got to take a run at it. I got to F Sunny. I have to.
Oh, my goodness. So who are you killing?
It's got to be Lita. I'm sorry.
Okay, because you can't kill CM Punk's wife. This is
no, you're
right.
Going to marry AJ. I mean, you know, she's young, virile.
Okay,
nerdy,
okay.
You know, got a lot going
I feel
on.
Like a dirty old man just answering that question.
Dirty old man.
Let's squeeze in one more.
All right, one
Come
more,
on.
Dan. Squeeze in being the optimal way there.
All right, guys. As an owner of a Sega Genesis, I'm going to turn to Stephen J. Sutton, who writes, are either of you guys retro gamers? And if you are, what are some of your early memories?
I mean, I played video games back in the day. I don't retro play them. And that's just more of a time thing at this point. But, I mean, I was a Nintendo... Give me your timeline, Will, if you had video games. So I was a Nintendo, Super Nintendo, PS, PS2, PS3, and that's where I tapped out.
Okay. Mine is Atari 2600.
I did have an Atari. I'm sorry. That's where I started.
Okay, yeah. Okay, then the original Nintendo, Super Nintendo, PS1, PS2 and Dreamcast and Xbox. And then I got the, what's the Xbox I have now? 360. And then I think I had a Nintendo 64, and I got a couple of Wiis for the kids.
Yes, that's right. So, I have a Wii as well.
But I loved games as a kid. I have when the what do you call them? The ROMs or the...
Yes, yep.
Is that what they are?
Computer. Yeah.
I did do that for a couple of them, including one of my favorite arcade games, which was the wrestling one. The one that had the Road Warriors as the bosses.
Yes, like, WrestleFest.
WrestleFest, where you
Great
could like
yep.
where you could tag Mr. Perfect with Sergeant Slaughter, or you do Hogan and Warrior, and then you had Demolition. Yeah,
and
oh yeah.
Play the Royal Rumble match.
Yes, played the ROM there.
Dreamcast, I have a quick question for you. Did you have the NBA game from like 2000-ish? 2000?
No, man.
What a game.
You know what, though, man? I mean, I had already mastered the NBA Live thing. Plus, NBA Live had great Easter eggs where you mm-hmm. could like, you know, type in Bill Russell as like your player, and it would give you like Bill Russell stats and a guy that just happened to have the same height and weight as Bill Russell. And you know what I mean? You could type in John Havlicek. And then Havlicek would pop up, or George Gervin, and a guy with a fro would appear. Like, you know, and after that, man, I was an NBA Live guy.
First basketball game you played, was it Bulls versus Blazers? Or was it Double Dribble, I guess? Was that the first?
No, man, it was Dr. J versus Larry Bird, brother, on Commodore 64.
You're really old. Double Dribble was my first, but Bulls versus Blazers was what changed the game.
Wait, hold on. Is Double Dribble the one like would do the replays that were like in black and white?
Yes, and it had
It had the
little mascots that would dance on the screen behind you. They only had a handful of teams, and then came Bulls versus Blazers, and then NBA Showdown was the one I played the hell out of. That's where they first really you could do a full like 82 game season and everything.
Yeah, no, I think NBA Live, the first one that I really went crazy for, NBA Live 95, and then I think we played all of them, and I think I finally tapped out on NBA Live, because, you know, like you said, the Sega ones, and after that I just gave up because I was getting too old, but I think I finally tapped out after like 2002, 2003.
Maybe. I had NBA Live 95 for my computer and played a lot on there. I had that and NHL 95 on my computer and NHL 96. Two great games. Had a great time playing. So I think we're pretty much at time. Dan, are we there?
23 seconds.
All right, good enough. Will, hell of a first show, I think. I had a blast. The time flew by.
It did.
A lot of great conversation.
I had fun, man. So I think, you know, we'll do this again. We'll have different challenges the next episode. And I'm looking forward to exploring like the history of wrestling through this medium.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We have a lot of different challenges. Already got a bunch of topics, but if you have any suggestions, you can get to us on Facebook, on the Police Simulation Facebook page, or on the ProWrestlingOnly.com message board. We have a dedicated thread for mailbag questions there as well. So, for our buddy Dan McGinn, working the clock behind the scenes, for Will, I am JR. We will talk to you at some point in the future. This will be a regular show. We're not going to commit to a schedule just yet, but we will be back on a very regular basis. So, you won't have to wait too long for the return of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. For Will, I'm JR. We're out.
I've been driving all night, my hands wet on the wheel. There's a voice in my head that drives my heel. It's my baby calling, and I need you here. And it's a 4:30, and I'm shifting gear. When she is lonely, I love